James, we are back.
We are.
And it's an afternoon recording, so you know what that means.
Yep. It's less dramatic on the Zoom than it is when we are on the...
Yeah, that's true. You can see what I'm doing.
Yeah.
See what I'm doing. Well, I'm excited. This is a new one for me. It's a jet-lagged coffee stout out of Athletic.
Yes. I had that for lunch, actually.
Did you?
I did, yes. I know the spot.
I know you're jealous that they're only 20 minutes away from me. So
a bit, yes, actually.
I had to take two trips to my car last week when I went down there for some pickup.
You were all wore out, I bet.
I was. Well, I sent half of it to you. So in fairness, you know. So as everyone knows, we're big fans of NA beer, and we've been talking about it quite a bit lately. And so why not try and get some actual experts on instead of just hearing James and I rant? So
totally.
So we are thrilled to have John Walker, one of the co-founders of Athletic Brewing from right here in Stratford, Connecticut, on the show with us. John, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me and us. Appreciate it.
Well, we I won't spend the whole time just gushing over how much we love the beer, because that would get old very quickly. But James and I, over the last year or so, have tried a whole bunch of different NA beers that are out there. You know, lots of levels of quality, and I'll say of attempts to do different things. And we're so happy to be able to have you on the show and talk a bit about how you got to where you are. So if you could just take us through a bit of why non-alcoholic, why beer, what got you to this point?
Gotcha. So I mean, I can go way back to where I started, and you know, just briefly. Food and beverage life forever, much to my parents' dismay, because they were in food and beverage too. Growing up, they just always told me to ward it off, but I didn't. And so I had a strong appreciation for beverages and food and pairings and things like that. And eventually I found my way out of the front of house and into the back of house, where I met the brewing team at Second Street Brewery. And a friend of mine said I should go take his job. And I kind of argued with him a little bit back and forth, but wound up taking it after I met brewmaster Rod Tweet at Second Street. He was awesome, and I just felt like the atmosphere and the vibe was great. And I loved the idea of making really good beer. So I became an assistant brewer and just kind of took everything in that I could and utilized the amazing brewing community that was in New Mexico at the time. I'm sure it's still there, but I'm not there. And just, you know, took in as much as I could, did basically, I consider it going back to college, because I had skipped all of those critical science courses in high school and college. I just skated by and ignored all of that stuff. And so brewing was actually pretty complicated for me to understand. But it was super exciting to learn the chemistry and everything once I got into it. So fast forward 7 years of being at Second Street, I met Bill Schufelt, the co-founder of Athletic, and original founder. It was his idea. And he had this crazy idea to make a craft non-alcoholic beer and make it taste good. And I was pretty intrigued. The idea, you know, it made sense to me. I had kids and I was active and having fun, and especially being in food and beverage, you know, being around alcohol pretty much my entire life, it was kind of like I was growing a little bit tired of it, honestly. And so there was like this natural segue for one. And then two, you know, Bill thought like, man, why hasn't anybody innovated in this segment in 30 years? And I thought that was intriguing. And we were going to go about it a brand new different way, which is like right in the spirit of craft. And so fit culturally. And at the end of the day, what we're doing is, you know, as Bill always says, we're adding occasions to the beer drinking life. So, you know, if you can make it taste good, people will enjoy beer more often. And so we set out to do that in about 4 years ago today. I started driving out to Connecticut, and we signed a lease in Stratford, Connecticut, built a brewery in about 9 months. We had some equipment on order already, and we took to homebrewing in those 9 months and did batches and batches and batches to try to figure out what we were going to do and how we were going to do it, because we had equipment ordered, but no proof of concept. So that was a fascinating and fun and crazy endeavor in and of itself, because it was like unlearning everything that I had learned about brewing to try to figure out how to do it. And he and I just sat in an office and tooled around back and forth doing, you know, five iterations at a time. And finally we came up with our process, and thankfully it timed up pretty well with the completion of the brewery. So, you know, that's our history in a nutshell. But at the end of the day, I think what we're aiming to do is just make a positive impact and make some really great beer that just happens to not have alcohol in it.
John, I love what you said about craft, because we talk about this, rant about this, and the fact that so much of what goes on right now in the general craft brewing space, craft in air quotes, is let's add more hops, let's add marshmallows, let's add, you know, milkshake this, milkshake that. And craft should, the concept of craft should be about innovation, which is what you guys have done. And the styles that you're putting out there, you're not diving into some of that wacky stuff that people mistake for innovation, I'll say.
Are you going to be upset if we do a little bit?
If you do it, hey, so we'll have that conversation. I'll tell you what.
Know what you're getting in for. That's all I'm saying. We will pull no punches.
We will. I will tell you what I'm upset about. Here's what I'm upset about. I was down there last weekend, and three days later, after picking up a whole bunch of beer, you released a Hefeweizen, which is probably one of my favorite styles. So now I have to go back.
Well,
I'm a bit upset about that.
You can have those.
I know that's not, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm out.
Polarizing style right there.
Yeah. I'm out. But you can give Greg all the lactosey ones. He loves lactose in his beer.
No. Lactose bad.
The idea of craft and the idea of innovation, I'm really interested in that. And one of the things I try and teach my students is, because they're, as you can imagine, over the last 5 years, 6 years or so, more and more of the students that I'm seeing are coming from, I call them crash successful craft brewers, right? And they just all of a sudden explode onto the scene, and they may have had very little understanding of what's actually going on in their beer. So they do what Greg does, where what Greg said, you know, they follow these trends and call it innovation. And they get into the class and you start teaching them, you start deep diving, you start saying, you know, explaining why things are. It's like, and you see like these light bulbs going off, like, oh, that's why, that's how I get it. Right. And they have resources to go to dig deeper into that. But like you guys, when you're doing the NA craft, you're kind of pioneering the space, right? So it's like, or not even pioneering, explorers, right? You're hacking and slashing through the jungle, right? The pioneers come after you. You're blazing the trail, right?
Yeah.
So how do you do that?
It can be lonely and scary at times.
Yeah.
Especially at the beginning, because, the brewing community is awesome. You can ask everybody everything, and everybody, you know, in theory should like try to help you make better beer. And they generally do that, but we just didn't have anybody to speak to. And there was almost no literature. And the literature that there was, you know, from the 1800s and 1950s. And it was kind of crazy. So I think really what it comes down to is being patient and methodical and really trying to appreciate and understand the ingredients and how they work. And, to really figure out what you can do to manipulate them to make them work for you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all the while showcasing their like great characteristics. So
how, what about your, you know, the things nobody talks about or very little they talk about them, but it's like, I like this concept of there really isn't a failed experiment, right? Because you always learn something, right?
Yeah.
Like Edison says, you know, I didn't fail 1,000 times making a light bulb. I learned 1,000 ways how not to make a light bulb. And that can be just as valuable. So like when you were looking at, and when you're starting out, and even I guess now to some extent, but maybe in the very early days, as you're going through those iterations and experimenting, I mean, what do we talk, what do you, give us some idea of turns that you had to go through to come up with something that you had, like you and hit on the golden. What did that, how long did it take to get to that? You know, how deep were you into it by then?
It took months and months. And, you know, we've said in, you know, publicly, and it was our thing, like we've done hundreds of homebrew batches, and it's true. And a lot of those times you'd take the same homebrew batch and split it off three different ways. And so really it's just like the scientific method. And so each turn, you can't be adjusting five things because then you don't understand any single thing. So it's really being methodical about breaking things down. You know, so you try your ingredients coming from beer, you kind of know like what ingredients work with what. And so that was, you know, we started there. It was like, well, I know that these hops and these malts work together. And so we'll brew with that using these different techniques, mess around with water, mess around with pH, mess around with temperatures, and see where that lands. And then, you know, like you said, learn from that as you go, fail three times, and just keep moving on. But
right.
I think just keeping the iterations simple for better understanding.
Sure. I like that. And Greg and I talk quite a bit about the scientific method geared, you know, how to be a scientist and a farmer at the same time, because every year is a new experiment, right? And what are you going to change this year? And keep your variables simple and write stuff down, right? And keep data and analyze that. So I like how that ties in sort of with that theme.
Yeah. I mean, think about the hop growers this year. They got some, a lot of lessons learning this year.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. We call it the University of Mother Nature. Tuition is high.
And it's scary, you know, when you think about it, because, you know, as far as like contracts and stuff like that, we try to approach it from a fairly responsible and realistic levels, because we understand that it affects everybody down to the farmer and like those families. And so we try to approach it like that. And when you think about it like that too, and you hear about 40% reduction in yields, like those are a lot of families like not making money.
Yep.
Which is crazy.
That's why we're keen on working with non-traditional hop growers in new areas, because the face of our agriculture is changing. And in order to be truly sustainable, not necessarily environmentally, but, you know, from a economically and from a business standpoint, to keep an industry going and thriving, we need to expand into new areas. And so much like, you know, you had explained when you guys were getting into the NA craft space, where there's really nothing, or some of the data that's out there so old or antiquated or coming from a different angle, that you have to sort of relearn everything and ask a lot of why questions. And, you know, we had to do the same thing in hop production when we were one of the earliest groups outside of the Pacific Northwest to start commercial hop production again, to learn, you know, well, you can't do that in Wisconsin. Well, why? Right. Well, I don't understand. And we're all scientists and engineers in our group. And we said, don't tell us we can't do something. That's like the last thing you want to do. We want to figure out why and try to figure that out. And to Greg's point, we, to our own detriment, you know, we focus so much on that we didn't focus as much as we needed to on the marketability side of things and sales side of things. So you end up cracking the code for your region and you're hitting commercial yields of, you know, 1800 to 2000 pounds an acre. And now you're like, uh-oh, where am I going to put this stuff?
Yeah. No one knows who you are. Yeah.
Right. I like the core. I like the drawing those corollaries between our two groups.
Yeah.
So in terms of hops, I mean, you mentioned contracts and all that for our growers who are out there who are thinking, ooh, James and Greg know John Walker. Maybe they'll introduce me.
Wrong.
Yeah, no. No, he's ours. He's ours. How do you manage sourcing? I mean, it's the same as any other brewery, I would imagine.
Yeah, it is. You know, we try to keep, you know, between me and Kevin Henschel, who's our director of brewing at this point, you know, we keep an eye on things on a weekly, loosely, and a monthly basis, quarterly touch basis with our providers, and just to, you know, go up, go down, talk about goings on. And, you know, we follow the basic projection model. Well, right now it's a little challenging because ours is more assertive, because our growth numbers have been pretty wild over the past couple of years. And so it's, you know, at first it was hard for like our partners to understand that growth curve. And they're, yes. They're like, yeah, I don't know. But then, you know, you're up like 300% and they're like, okay, fine. Mm-hmm. So it's a bit of managing that and trying to be realistic, but I think just staying on top of it and being transparent and also building those relationships with your partners so that if and when you're in need, you can call them and they'll pick up the phone, because you can get on the wrong side of it, I'm sure.
Oh, yes.
we talk a lot about building those, you know, from the grower perspective of building those relationships and being a partner, not being a vendor, being a partner.
Yep.
Adding value to that whole relationship. Mm-hmm. Because you could go pretty much, you know, you have a dozen places you could go to get your hops from. And who's building your confidence, right? And who's collaborating with you on some level to say, you know, we understand we're going to add value to your operation.
Yeah. And this, you know, this year specifically, or going into next year, will be a fascinating testament to relationships. Mm-hmm. We'll see the outcome in about a year.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Very true. Very true. And as well, it'll be interesting with the growth, as you mentioned. I mean, you were already blowing up a bit with this NA space starting to grow, and then COVID hit, where no one could go out and drink anymore. Everyone wanted, I mean, the pantry stocking became a huge thing. So that added to your ridiculous growth curve. And as things get a little better out there and folks can go out again, it's a tricky market. It's a tricky market to navigate. Hopefully your growth numbers will continue the way they're going.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there was, as far as athletic goes, we had so many things that we had lined up for the year that COVID consumed, that we, you know, all these marketing things and projects and events and teammates that were just like at the starting line. And so we just hit pause on all those.
Right.
And so we're pretty excited to turn all those back on, open the floodgates and let loose. And we have, you know, we've got territory managers in every single territory that we sell beer, because, you know, the way we grow our community is by getting cans in hands, and those people are out there and they're chomping at the bit to, you know, get to the finish lines and get to the trailheads and the restaurants. And so it's exciting. I look forward to some normalcy.
Air quotes around normalcy. Yeah.
Very true.
So I've been talking to Bill for probably the better part of a year about having this conversation. And one of the things he mentioned to me a while back was that according to your research, about 80% of your customers also drink alcoholic beer at some point during the week, that it's very much, you mentioned adding occasions to the beer drinking life, which I thought was such an interesting perspective. And you do, I mean, athletic is in the name. And I joked recently on one of our recordings that with athletic in the name, I shouldn't be allowed in the building. There should be, not even legally, there should be something in nature that prevents me from entering the building with the word athletic on it. But, you know, you seem to position the product, Adam, you mentioned the starting line before, you position it as something that goes along with an active lifestyle, the way almost the way a Gatorade would be, or a Red Bull would be promoted. You're putting it, as opposed to putting it alongside, say, folks that are in recovery, or folks that have just decided they're, you know, for either health or other reasons that they're not going to do alcohol. You seem to have gone more toward the, you can do this and what you're already doing. I just find it to be a very interesting way of approaching the market, and it seems to be working very well for you.
Yeah. You know, at the end of the day, it's like, you know, for the beer people and the beer converts, you know, people are realizing that they just enjoy the ingredients. You know, they have a better understanding of and appreciation for like malt and hops, and it doesn't really matter if there's alcohol in it or not. And then past that, it's like everybody's busy. And your Gatorade reference was good, because it's like you just have that to keep things going. It's refreshing. It's good. So, you know, to have a beer version of that is like perfect.
Yeah, why not? It's like, why wouldn't we do this?
Yeah.
And now that that's been said out loud, you know there's going to be a Gatorade hard seltzer coming out any day. Okay. You know, can you imagine that icy blue and
with antioxidants, no less, of course. Yes. I digress. Can I talk chemistry a minute? I'm interested in, and feel free to say, shut up, James. I can't not telling you that it's a trade secret. You talked about ingredients, and you talked about messing around in the water. You're talking about all these traditional beer making biochemistry that's happening. We have the yeast component that's in there, and the act of fermentation is part of the biochemistry of beer production. Then we have, you know, so it's that there's multiple ways to reduce or remove the alcohol that is served in a beer. How did you guys decide on the way that you were going to do it? And why did you decide to go that way?
I think, you know, we decided to go the way we went was because we found the best results from a flavor perspective. And that's it.
I mean, you had mentioned too that you had put all this order in for all this equipment, right? And then you started making your beer. So it's like, where in that process of discovery did you determine how you were going to treat the alcohol removal or reduction approach?
The equipment was on order, and that was like, it was terrifying, because, you know, at the end of your 9-month study, maybe you've got a whole lot of useless equipment in front of you. Mm-hmm.
You had a minute of terror. I could see it.
No, I mean, you know, we had the stuff on order, and we just approached it, and, you know, there was some luck in there I'll throw that out there, that we were able to find a way that was totally normal and natural, and mm-hmm. we could utilize all of our incredible equipment.
Good.
So yeah, a lot of luck right there.
And do you see, based on what was known when you started, from a educational informational standpoint to what you know now, you feel like you could write the book on it? You know what I mean? It's like, we had to figure all this stuff out ourselves. We had to figure out how to make all these pieces parts work together. And that's a bit of our secret sauce.
I mean, to some extent, and, you know, it would be writing the book for our process. I know there are others, sure. And, you know, they're like all these other processes are successful and have been so for decades. Mm-hmm. I think that we joke around about that at work about who's going to write the book. And we're like, literally someone should probably write a paper here. And so, We've been thinking about that. I think that we continue to learn a lot every single day. It's a humbling process, to say the least. And, you know, I do think that knowing what we know now, as far as like processing, cleaning and sensitivities and food, you know, food safety, like everybody is a better brewer. Everybody is a better lab technician and scientist. So it's, yeah, it's been successful from a learning perspective for sure. Good.
Outstanding.
Great, great. And, you know, when it's time to write that book, James is a pretty good writer. And if you give him a cot in the brewery and, you know, a cot in the brewery and a mug, he'll ghostwrite it for you.
A hose. I think a mug. Hose.
Yep.
And I could get 3 or 4 chapters done. No problem.
Tell us a bit about, James, are you good on brewing chemistry?
I'm good for now. Okay.
I wanted to ask about styles and how you make those decisions, because I can't, and maybe I'm wrong about this, I can't get it out of my head that the NA community is going to have different leanings than the regular craft beer community. And maybe I'm wrong there, but for example, I'm a dark beer guy. I'm a porter guy. I'm a stout guy. That said, that I picked up some of the lychee sour, and I could bathe in that. I mean, it's fantastic. I absolutely love it.
Awesome.
So that's going to be a line on the next t-shirt. I could bathe.
It's another t-shirt. So, yeah, right there.
Yeah.
And so, we need to talk about the seriousness here of a national Canpai lager.
Yes.
My life will not be complete until I can get that in Wisconsin.
We're working on dressing it up on a larger scale. It's complicated.
I can appreciate that, but damn, that is a fine beer.
Yeah, that was all. That's all Tyler Tucker out of California.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well done.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, Greg, go ahead.
I know we wanted to get a plug in there for Canpai and get it on the record that they're working on it. So that is good. That is one of our favorites. But yeah, I'm curious how you, if you follow the general craft beer trends. I mean, are we going to see a pumpkin beer, an Oktoberfest? I mean, it's almost too late for pumpkin beer now that it's August.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you know, it's a fascinating conversation, to say the least. So we are, you know, we're bigger now, and people have come to expect and appreciate those bigger seasonal occasions, say the pumpkin beer. So yeah, we did one last year that was a pumpkin porter out of California, you know, and it was really successful, I must say. And so we will be doing things like that. We're going to have an Oktoberfest, and we've been bound by capacity a lot over the past 3 years. And so now that we're finally completing some really significant capacity improvements, we will be able to do that. And I know the, you know, the marketing team too is pretty pumped to get out there on the national level and, you know, side by side, like Sam Adams and Lagunitas, and be able to play and succeed in those realms. So it's exciting for everybody. Kind of, it's definitely fun for the brewers too, because we've got some pretty incredible brewing teams who, you know, they do enjoy tinkering with some bizarre ingredients. You mentioned marshmallows twice now, and there is a reality in there that there will be a marshmallow product. It'll be dark, so you might like it.
Okay, we're done. This is over.
Well, I mean, to each their own.
It was going
to
happen.
So I think what's super interesting, like we figured out how we were going to do our thing, and we opened up, craft 2.0. So we can do absolutely everything that was in the alcoholic segment, in the non-alcoholic segment. And now we actually have an incredible team who's pumped to be creating on that level, you know, and everybody's pioneering every day. So
sure.
So you gotta appreciate the the funny adjuncts to that end.
Oh yes, and we do tongue in cheek all the time. It's sort of our shtick, Greg and I. It's like, really, I don't need another gummy bear beer for the love of God.
Pumpkin. I mean, pumpkin for the past 2 years has been a really contentious topic. I'm not a pumpkin guy. Bill yeah. is a huge pumpkin advocate.
Yeah.
So.
I don't have a problem with it myself, but being like the science guy and the plant scientist by training and worked in the ag industry for years, most of that pumpkin that is used is an actual pumpkin, but that's okay. We might as well call it squash beer. But, you know, I'm also very cynical. So, you know, it goes hand in hand.
We did a smoked squash beer last fall too.
Nice. Yeah. That's fun. See, Greg, we can put that on Backyard Brew Farm.
Yes,
that's one of our other podcasts where we talk about interesting other adjuncts because we have a considerable homebrew following for our podcast. So we kicked off this little thing to help grab some of that market share and call it Backyard Brew Farm, where we just talked about chicory, right?
Yes.
Is that the one that just landed? Chicory?
Yep.
Chicory. One of my favorite adjuncts. And yeah. That kind of stuff. I don't think we're going to be talking about gummy bears, though.
No.
Marshmallows, maybe marshmallows.
We did a collaboration with Chef Chris Costantino out of California, and we used bay leaves and fresh lemon verbena.
Oh, nice.
And it was a single hop cascade beer with those two ingredients. And to this day, it's the most interesting beer I've ever participated in making.
Yep, we did. I did work with a brewer here. We did one using Kapoor basil, Indian basil. It's got a heavy anise kind of licorice component to it, but also with the basil oils, and it went into a amber. It was incredible.
Yeah.
They just meshed so well together, but you would have never have figured that, right?
Yeah.
You're putting what in that beer?
Yeah. Yeah, no, talking to Chris, he was like, it's going to work. And you're like, all right, Yeah. and lo and behold, it was fascinating and great.
Cool.
And thus the craft.
Yeah, that's the craft part.
Mm-hmm.
You bet. What are some of the trends that, I hate using the word trend. What do you have your eye on? I mean, what are things that really pique your interest in the beer space right now?
Consistency. I'm still kind of down our little rabbit hole of just reinventing, you know, the craft 2.0, because all of a sudden we can do single hop beers and showcase all these awesome hops in their single hop form in a non-alcoholic variety, which is very different from, you know, what would be an alcoholic counterpart. Mm-hmm. So things like that, as a team, as a company, I think we do love sour beers and playing with fruit. If we had the ability to do more of that, we all certainly would. It's fun, and it's fun from a chemistry and production standpoint too. It's challenging and quirky.
Very quirky.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, fruit and sour, things like that, they're exciting.
Yeah, I like those too. It's polarizing though, almost as polarizing as the marshmallow lactose topic, but it's a different kind of polarizing.
Yep. Yeah, but yeah, I feel like there's more potential market share there. Because I see, like, you know, Sauvignon Blanc drinkers and Vino Verde drinkers going to a sour. So.
Well, we see that, and there's New Glarus Brewing here and just south of me. They built a enormous, they call it their sour fruit cave, right? It's all natural wood lined on the inside, all open fermentation, gigantic antique foeders opened doing old school souring, where he's condensing on the wood on the ceiling and dripping back into the vats. And it's really, really cool.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. Next time you're in the area.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they've always impressed. And I forget sometimes how significant they are, but they've been making some great brew for a long time.
Long time. Yep. And they're good friends of ours now, which doesn't hurt.
That's usually the trade that occurs. I get some Athletic out to James and he gets some New Glarus back here to me.
That's pretty much the way it works.
Do the rotation. Yeah. So what, if anything, is in your refrigerator that's not from Athletic?
Milk.
Yeah. Some oat milk, some regular milk. I think, you know, from like an alcoholic standpoint, I basically just stick to the consistency, or the consistent brews. So the old teams who have been doing it and doing it right for a long time. So, you know, I trend towards like Sierra Nevada and Stone and things like that. They're awesome. And, you know, they embark on little projects here and there, which are fun. And then I do try to catch up on all the other NAs that are being produced out there just to see how things are going. Mm-hmm. You know, we've made some friends along the way, so it's fun to see how things are developing and improving. And so, yeah, just trying everything.
I like your consistency remarks because it's something Greg and I talk about frequently too. And I don't know, maybe it's a reflection of our age. Men of a certain age start talking about beer consistency. And it's like, I don't know what happens. There's at some point you know, you're trying all this new crazy stuff and it's like, there's so much new crazy stuff that you just like, where's just the good standard? Show me that you have polished your craft and you can do it time over time over time. And I have confidence in that.
But no, I mean, the idea is to walk into a beer store and find the can with the most colors on it. Isn't that the idea?
Have a seizure. Yes, exactly.
That apparently is what sells. If it's bright and shiny and maybe, you know, is disco ballish, then that
looks like a Jackson Pollock painting. Yeah, right. No.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, you know, consistency, it's been, again, like referencing our growth, and it's not like gloating, but we have grown so much and like added systems and brewing systems and teammates. It's been, you know, certainly a challenge and a fun challenge, but a challenge nonetheless to grow and try to remain consistent and you have hurdles and come up with problems and try to deal with them in real time and learn from them and be humble. But yeah, it's fun. And I think everybody enjoys working on consistency, generally speaking.
Go ahead.
Sorry. I've seen you do that. You've got maybe five core brands that are out there. Five core lines rather that out there nationwide. And then some of this stuff we're talking about, like the Conpie and by the way, I haven't mentioned it, but this coffee stout's fantastic. It's been interesting as you guys have grown, especially with the new facility out in California. James and I both follow one of the Facebook pages, one of the NA Facebook pages. And over the last year, people get so excited. Look, I found Athletic. They're here now, you know, as you've popped up in various locations with Run Wild and Upside Dawn and the consistent varieties that you've been putting out there.
Yep. Yeah, no, it's great. And it's interesting. Like we're still so young that, you know, any day could still be the first day in any given market. So, you know, there's a lot of excitement and we do have a lot of fun with the creative stuff. Like, you know, Jim made that jet lag coffee porter. It's got the beans are from Bali and it's a local roaster. So just try to keep it fun.
Yeah. Do you think that, that's a leading question. How about this? Scalability. So you talk about your rapid expansion and just growth in general and something we have a difficult time educating small scale hop growers on when they hit that trajectory and they're ready to expand, that some things in production are linear, other things are not linear, right? And you can't use the same equation across your entire expansion operation. Where did you find maybe some linear expansion? Like you're like, okay, yeah, it scales pretty good. But in other ones are like hockey sticks. You know, it's like, and how did you know that going in? Was it a surprise?
Yeah, I mean, for us, it's always been a concern. It's still a concern because, you know, we started off in 5 gallon batches and we just had 400 barrel fermenters delivered to California yesterday.
Awesome.
So going from 5 gallons to 400 barrels is pretty crazy. So, yeah, I mean, especially from a liquid component and like yeast, things don't scale naturally. You have to learn and manipulate. And the biggest thing is, like you said earlier, like take notes. And yeah, I'm trying to think of examples of like what has scaled.
There may be nothing. I have no idea. You know, I've never been in that space. You know, some things like in hop production that scale linearly are things like labor. Right. You know, you need so many people to do X amount of stuff and it scales relatively linearly. But there are other things like harvest capacity or processing capacity that do not scale linearly, or water usage and just things in general agriculture that just they hockey stick. They go like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, to that end, our water consumption is on an awesome decline, you know, because of scaling. So Kevin, our brewery director, has been working a lot on managing and looking at the water trends. And from where we were a couple of years ago to where we are now, we're at like an exceptional level of water usage. So some cool things. So, you know, with scale, there are some efficiency savings and those are exciting. And, you know, with scale too, you can usually think outside the box and move towards a greener future, if you will,
right,
and try to improve your wastewater, try to improve your water consumption. And so, you know, I think what's scaling well is interest and teammates being able to explore. And as long as you keep the line, you know, those lines of exploration open and let people flourish and, you know, discover, then everybody's going to succeed. So
awesome.
Yeah.
Well, Greg, you want to play your game?
Yep.
We're running out of time here.
I was just going to say,
busy man.
Yep. Just going to say, we're getting tight here. So we play a game with our brewer guests called Beer the Name. We've got a couple of names of beers that we made up, and we'd like to know if this was on your tap list, on the mythical chalkboard in your tap room. These names were up there. What would you have put into these beers?
Now, did you select these names with Athletic in mind, or are these just thought up names?
So that is an excellent question. Some of them are things like movie quotes and whatnot that sound like good beer names to me, but some of them are with Athletic in mind. Such as, we'll start with Uphill Both Ways.
Uphill Both Ways. I think, I thought I heard a metronome for a second.
little no, I can make that happen.
Yeah.
I would say a non-alcoholic, barrel-aged stout.
Uphill Both Ways.
I would try that. Most of these I would try that.
Because it's like a really challenging endeavor.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. So from a production standpoint, it would be a really challenging endeavor.
Yep. I like that. Okay. How about, again, not necessarily an athletic themed one, Sitting on the Dock of the Bay.
Sitting on the Dock of the Bay. I would say a blood orange IPA.
I like that.
Yeah. Again, I would try.
As long as it doesn't have any citra in it.
not a citra fan.
Not a citra fan here.
Yeah, why? Just out of curiosity.
Too much sulfur. I'm super sensitive to all those sulfur thiol compounds in those hops, and citra's got a huge amount of it. I get it to about here and I'm like, nope, I can't do it.
Yep.
It's not my thing.
So I sent him some two trellises the other day, and some of it was the Cascade Sabro. Mm-hmm. And then the other, I think the one you had just run out of, it was Citra, and I don't recall what it was, what the mix was. But
Centennial?
Was it Centennial? James knew immediately there was Citra in the one he popped open.
Yeah, I don't remember what the Citra one was. The Cascade Sabro one was fascinating.
Yeah. Sabro is a really cool hop. Very, very interesting.
And for just for fun, I'll let you know that was only 25% Sabro because it's so dominant. We cut it back.
Yeah.
To only 25%.
I believe it. Otherwise, it would have been in too much, just too much stuff.
So along the lines of two trellises, which I think is such a neat concept when you take two hops and mix them, and you've done a couple of those over time. So here are two beers I want you to create for us, sort of a brother and sister beer. One's called Marathon. The other one is called Sprint.
This is back to the game.
This is back to the game. Yeah.
Okay. Marathon. Oh, this is for Dermot. Dermot's on our special operations team, but I'm going to say he wanted a cream stout with electrolytes or a sweet stout, not cream, no lactose. that was one of those things learning as a brewer, like sweet stouts and cream stouts don't necessarily have to have lactose.
Right.
With some electrolytes. So that would be the Marathon. Mm-hmm. And then the Sprint. A low carb, light type brew, like a macro-esque lager.
American style lager, light lager.
Yeah.
How horrible is it that as I'm taking notes, when I write down light, when it comes to beer, I write L-I-T-E. It just flows off my
mind. It just happens.
I want to ask about the special operations team, because that sounds like my vision of that. I'm thinking special ops, and
they're all in like black tech gear.
Yeah.
Brewery, right. Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, you know, we're still full on startup mode. And everybody wears so many hats so like Dermot, for instance, he's on the operations team and he does like special projects. So he's special ops because he participates in the tap room and doing the untapped menu. He runs events around the state. He does tech stuff. He works on delivery systems. When you have these people and you want to like, everybody wants to have a title they're proud of. It's right. Like, this works.
I love it.
I just see him rappelling down the 400 barrel fermenters, mm-hmm. It's like fast roping.
Our safety director would not approve.
No,
I mean, even just on the business card, I mean, that's
right.
You know, I'm thinking about hanging out at the bar, handing out that business card. Hey, I'm on the special ops team.
Special ops.
It's like the mic drop. I'm retiring now.
Yep.
I made it.
So, awesome.
So the last one from the game, and we use this one with everyone. James, do you want to do it?
No, you do it.
Okay. I'll punch you in the throat.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Habanero sour.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
We've had hot peppers before, but never a sour. That is an interesting combination. Yeah. And I do think that would do it. That wouldn't be the only place it would punch you.
That is quite true.
Yeah.
That was born of a friend who mentioned his 9-year-old at the time. He overheard him saying to a friend, to one of his other 9-year-old friends, something along the lines of, if you say that again, I'm going to punch you in the throat. And I looked at my buddy and said, I'm using that on my next podcast.
Yeah, that's one of those really strong insults. It's I think when our son was really little, he said, I'm going to put hair in your mouth. And we're like, that is so gross. And nobody's ever said that.
They're very specific, you know? It's not just, hey, I'm going to kick you. You know, these are extremely specific, but I'm going to put hair in your mouth. We're going to use that on the next
one. Yeah, that's going to be the next. That's going to be, absolutely.
Awesome. Brilliant. I'll make sure he listens.
I love it. The only other one I was going to give you to do, and I'm not going to do it because it's too obviously a seltzer, was 200 burpees, please.
Oh, nice.
And I just decided myself that that would have to be a seltzer.
Seltzer. What was that IPA style that came and went?
Which one?
The champagne. The champagne IPAs.
The Brut IPA. The Brut.
The Brut. The Brut. Yeah. Yeah.
Oof. Yeah.
Not a fan.
Yeah. No, that was short lived, and that was fine.
I'm going to totally use that phrase too. Awesome.
Yeah, well, John, thank you so much for joining us. This was great. Again, you have two big fans here.
Yep.
And we are excited to see what comes next from Athletic.
Anything we can do to help, you know where we're at.
Yeah, no, appreciate it. And, you know, this is awesome. And spreading the word and just talking stuff. And I think one of the biggest things for us is, like, you know, finally it's legitimate and it's a real category and style, and so having these conversations you know, really helps, and it's exciting to, because, you know, people are gonna, this is just the beginning, I'm pretty sure. So
yeah, absolutely agree.